This episode of the Braving Business Podcast is sponsored by, well, me. I'm PJ Benoit, and I've been in the domestic and international logistics space for over 30 years. If you need any assistance with transportation or logistics, my team and I will jump at the chance to help. Whether it be parcel shipments, e-commerce, pallets and freight, full truckload, international air and ocean, imports, exports, warehousing and distribution, or really anything under the logistics umbrella, we got you covered. For more details, please go to shipwithpj.com. That's shipwithpj.com. Reach out to me there. Mention you found me on this podcast for a special surprise. And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business Podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Hello there, PJ. I just heard it there. Did you actually say hello there, or did you decide to change your trademark?
No, I said, well, hello there.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's my headset. I didn't hear it. I just heard there.
Oh, no.
There.
I said, well, hello. Of course, I'm all about salutations. I'm not going to start a fantastic show with an amazing guest by not saying hello. So.
All right. Well, fair enough. Hello there. How are you, sir?
I'm well, dude. Hey, guess what? This past weekend, what? I went and saw a band by the name of The. And they are...
The. I've heard of The. They've been around a while.
They've been around a long time. They're one of my favorite bands when I was in high school. And
wow.
And when I was going to high school in Hawaii, you know, you don't have a lot of concerts. There's not a lot of bands who come out. And those were my formative years where I was finally going to concerts that I chose to go to. And you know, of course, though, I was never going to come to the islands. And so they came to Chicago and I got to see him. I was blown away. Never in a million years would I have thought I was going to be able to see him. It's fantastic.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go listen to The. I remember thinking their name was the most ridiculous name ever and didn't listen to their music as a result. You're wearing a shirt. I see that. Actually my son went to see what I think is a pretty cool concert this week. He actually flew from school. He goes to Tufts in Boston. He flew to San Antonio and saw Billy Joel and Sting.
Nice.
Doing a concert together. That's a hell of a concert right there.
No kidding. Jessica, what was the last concert you went and saw?
Last concert. That's a good one. This is wild. It was a bomba concert in the middle of the projects of Puerto Rico with my kids. And it was like some up and coming rapper, like just working the crowd. That was the last concert. It was a street concert. Concerts are a little different here on the island. That was the last one.
Well, I'm sure Bad Bunny would be amazing to see whenever he plays in Puerto Rico.
I've seen him play. He did a listening party here, so I was able to see him come down in his really cool car and play his whole album, and all his like friends were there. It was really intimate and cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Bad Bunny, come on. Absolutely. 100%.
Now that's a great name. Bad Bunny,
Bad
right?
Bunny's
we're talking good names. Bad. That's a great name.
Well, and
it's
also,
a hell of a lot better than The.
Hey, now. But also,
come on, it's a terrible name. Admit it.
Oh, are you what? Enough of you. Let's talk about Jessica.
All right, let's do that.
So today, folks, we have the amazing Jessica Gonzalez on our show. She is a powerhouse of resilience and innovation in the business world, particularly in the challenging area of event technology and sustainable business. She is a Latino CEO and serial entrepreneur, known for bootstrapping her first company InCharged from her parents' house and turning it into a globally recognized event technology firm, working with brands like Google, Coca-Cola, and Coachella, see the bands, with revenues exceeding $25 million. She later launched a software company that allowed consumers, mainly at events, to interact with products and get samples in exchange for completing questionnaires. When the pandemic hit, it wasn't exactly the best time to be in the event business, so both companies were impacted and neither survived the pandemic. In fact, they both went bankrupt. And that had to have been an incredibly painful experience, but instead of just giving up, Jessica brushed herself off and pivoted, founding Lux Disinfect, a disinfection tech company, to help meet urgent health needs in the community. Not only did Lux Disinfect become a legitimate business with millions in revenue, and Jessica was then able to sell it less than 2 years later. Lustig's disinfectant, gosh, say that 20 times real fast, helped keep people safer from being exposed to COVID, but, pardon my adorable pun, it also exposed Jessica to the great opportunities of the sustainability and waste management industry. See what I did there? And
yes, you are just so clever, PJ.
Sometimes I am. And being the entrepreneur she is, she ran with it. Her newest enterprise, Happen Ventures, applies her entrepreneurial grit to tackle sustainable waste management, where she is challenging the status quo and helping transform waste into resources for communities and reducing landfill impact. A proud single mother and mentor, Jessica brings a nothing is impossible mindset to every challenge that she faces. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the Braving Business podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica, it's great to have you on. You've had an incredible and super varied journey. And it began with major sacrifices. You moved back home, worked multiple jobs, and had a dream of being an entrepreneur, of being a CEO. Talk to us about where did that drive come from? This willingness to sacrifice so much to own your own business and build your own dreams. Where did that come from?
So that's a really great question. I have no idea. I always wonder what is the fire under my ass, pardon my French, that gets me up every day and puts me, you know, in the driver's seat of the things that I'm doing. And I don't know. I feel entrepreneurs are just kind of born. And they have that zing from the beginning. And then if they find their way through, then they become business owners and then they scale and so forth. I was hustling since I was in grade school, selling whatever I could. And it was just something that was instinctual in me for some reason. And it still is. I wake up every day with the same drive I did 15 years ago in just building and building and growing. Where it comes from, I don't know. I wish I could bottle it up and sell it, and that would be a business within itself, but no idea. Just that fire.
That's amazing, actually. So bootstrapping a company and keeping 100% ownership, no easy feat, but you've done it multiple times. So what strategies or philosophies guided you through these early decisions when you launched your businesses?
So being brutally honest, bootstrapping the first company was simply because I had no idea how to get money. I being a woman Latina, I felt very intimidated in the rooms I was in. So asking for money was even harder. And I said, I'll just go out and do it myself and figure it out. So the first business, and what I call getting my bachelor's in business, the whole bootstrapping thing came with just, I had no money to do anything. I had to figure it out and utilize things like Amazon and Craigslist and all these different resources to try to make my vision come true. And honestly, I feel like that's the best way for all starting entrepreneurs is, if you're given a ton of money up front, you probably are not going to manage it the best way as if you had to kind of do a little bit of everything on your own. And I'm glad I did that and learned, because I was very frugal with everything. And it taught me how to learn every single aspect of the business, because I couldn't hire a finance person, couldn't hire a salesperson, couldn't hire an engineer. I had to do it all at some point myself, marketing. So bootstrapping in the beginning was very essential. And I kept at it because I always had this mindset of just, no one works as hard as I did. And I got really frustrated whenever I tried to, later down in the business road, bring on other partners. And I just figured the best way is just hire a really great team. And that's allowed me to keep more of the percentage myself strategically and be able to focus on as much as I can when it comes to growing the business.
So let's talk about a couple of things that I want to pull out. So a couple of threads I want to pull on that you just touched on. So one is, necessity is, they say, is the mother of invention, right? There's a reason that the cliche exists. A lot of entrepreneurs are in the same boat you're in, whether they know how to raise money or not. Most do not. Even if they so-called knew how to do it, there isn't any reason to believe that anyone would give them any money because they've not done anything yet. And so the reality that a lot of businesses have to start from a place of not having resources tends to create entrepreneurs that are more innovative. So I think innovation tends to come from scarcity. The second part that I want to touch on, I don't know if you've had the opportunity since to start businesses with other people's capital. I've had the opportunity to do both. And what I learned the hard way, the first time I was doing a business with people's capital where it seemingly wasn't as difficult because I had more resources, was that a lot of times you tend to make some mistakes with that. So the benefits of not having when they are not there oftentimes lead to other kinds of mistakes that are made when you do have resources. And so it isn't that one way is better than the other necessarily. If there is a better way, it tends to be having to do without initially makes you a more accomplished, more complete entrepreneur. But have you had the opportunity to since start businesses with other people's money, and have you experienced it being different, or have you continued to start your business with your own money?
With Vendex, I was able to start, I was able to get funding. It was my second pitch and it was a very capital intensive business. So I was able to get some seed funding for that. And it was literally right before COVID hit. So was on the up and up, finally, you know, was pitching to be able to afford to get more machines and got the investment, and COVID hit and obliterated all of that. So I didn't get the luxury of being able to enjoy spending it in the right way. I really want to keeping people employed. But now, given that I have sold two of my companies and, you know, moved into another field, I've just invested myself in building these companies. And also now I know a lot more. So now I'm building a company with the intentions of how to sell it instead of building a company just, you know, kind of piecemealing and scrapping it together. Now I know exactly what the pillars are that investment bankers are looking for. So when I do, or if I do ask for money, it's a lot more valuable.
Very cool. Very cool. I find that, you know, I've been involved in a couple of startups, not of my own, but also I worked for large startups that got like a ton of intensive capital in the beginning, the pre-seed and the seed and the series A and the series B. And it's amazing how many dollars are flying around. And both of those failed after I left, just so you know. So it's just, it's interesting. Like, you know, it's all about the grit and the determination. And money's great, and money affords a lot of opportunity. But just like both of you are saying, if you don't manage it well and you don't have a real plan for it, it can fail, you know, pretty easily. So great, great lesson there. Let me ask about COVID. So when COVID hit, you know, both of the companies that you had built, you know, bootstrapping all the way, went bankrupt, unfortunately, and you pivoted to launch Lux to
Well, it sounded like one was not bootstrapped, just to set the record straight. It sounded like one was one she had raised money for, if I heard her correctly.
Yes, the first one was bootstrapped, and I funded the second one and then got money right before COVID.
I'm sorry. When I say bootstrap, I also think of just all the work behind that. So I meant the efforts in my head.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm still bootstrapping, I feel. You know, that's the... That's the real way I feel like to run a business.
That's right. It's the mentality. So you told us in your pre-interview that you believe that when you had moments like these, like the bankruptcies, an entrepreneur needs to sulk, then pivot and move on quickly. And so can you walk us through those first few days of realizing all you've worked for is kind of going away? How long did you sulk? Like, what did that look like? And can you explain the decision to start a new company, especially when the world was burning and no one knew what COVID even was?
Man, I feel a lot of people have very similar beginning of the story because we all didn't know, right? When is it opening? We had employees that we wanted to pay. And that was, you know, the thing that weighed heavy on me. I had a mortgage. I had a kid on the way and one at home. So I had all these personal things and we're all stuck inside the house and sulking what looked, it was more like waiting. So waiting was the hard part, not knowing when things would open and start, and what became 2 days, then 2 weeks, then 2 months, and then eventually 2 years, was the hardest thing. And so after about, I'd say maybe a month of realizing that no one knows what they're doing and things are not opening up and it's going to stay this way, that's when I said, okay, let me figure out how I can make my way out of this. First and foremost, how do I get my kid back in school so then I can actually breathe a little? I have a toddler running around, you know, and not have a missed school and be able to like really dive in. And then the idea of disinfection came, and how do I aid with that? And it went from like depression of losing the business, I can't pay anybody in these PPP loans, to the excitement of starting something fresh with my bare hands, only being able to build what's available at Home Depot at 6 a.m. in the lines waiting. And it was exciting for me because I feel like I got to start new like I did back then. And that gave me a whole new breath of life, you know, just building that up. And then that took off. But as quick as that took off, I'll say the ending real quick. Great. That business also started to, and that's why I sold it at, you know, kind of like on its way down. COVID business went up. That one went down really quick. So I learned really fast, you know, the meaning of like, understand your success, but also don't think about now. You have to think about 3 years from now. And that thinking wasn't there while building it. But it was tough. But I did enjoy a couple Netflix and pizza nights, you know, not doing anything. It was helpful. Couldn't do anything. Then back to building.
Jessica, I want to talk to you about a feeling that I had, a business that that failed during COVID. It wasn't entirely related to COVID, but COVID certainly didn't help. And I remember feeling a lot of shame about the business not succeeding. Can you talk about shame? And you had some money. You had other people's money. How did you deal with just the internal sense of, wow, this didn't work out. I did not succeed. How did you work through that?
That's it. Well, first, shame is such a strong word because man, it'll get you. It wasn't as much shame because I knew that there were external factors that were making it impossible for me to fail. And I've made it my mission to pay back my investors. I want to just sell this new company first. That's my goal, to make them whole. It was more fear than anything. And, you know, the investors, to be brutally honest, they had other investments, they had money, right? But the people that worked for me, you know, they counted on those paychecks and that company, and that killed me. I had a mortgage. I had a kid on the way. So I think the fear was so debilitating sometimes. And it's also what drove me to kind of move. And kind of going back to like what gives you that drive in the beginning, you know, I think it's trauma and fear that really fuels a lot of entrepreneurs and, you know, the fear of failing, the fear of not making it, the fear of not doing what you set out to do. So definitely I was very scared, and I was, and I guess the shame part came in and just not being able to take care of the people who've taken care of the business for so long, that was really rough. And then kids, you know, putting a roof over their head.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the fear, right? Let's talk about, how did that manifest? How did you face it? What did you do? Like, your reaction to it, was it more instinctual? Was it more, I got to strategize? Like, how did you keep that dragon at bay?
Was there a fake it till you make it component to it? I mean, fear is a very, glad you brought up fear, because fear is a massive motivator. We've had people that are some of the most successful people on earth on this podcast tell us that they wake up feeling fear almost daily on some level and need to manage that fear. And so for successful entrepreneurs to understand that fear is not something to run away from or be ashamed of, but something to deal with and have a plan for, I think is a really important thing. Tell us about your, tell us about how you process fear. And thanks for sharing that, by the way.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I read not too long ago, or I saw something that talked about, you know, a lot of successful people have trauma and this fear that they had growing up. And that's kind of what motivates them to just show up every day. And I resonated with that because I do feel that like my upbringing and just being raised by a single dad was part of, you know, the, you know, I have to make it. I have to, you know, do it for the family. You know, I have to figure it out. Like, I want a better life for my kids than, you know, I had. And yeah, I'm today, even having any accolades or any success, I am always scared shitless. Pardon my French. You know,
you speak a lot of great French,
but I know, really. You're like fluent.
I have a potty mouth. Yeah, I'm always really, really, it's always there, but I feel like I've learned to use that as that motivator and that driver. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm not sleeping in. I'm getting up and getting what I need to get done. That is some fear underlying in there. Faking it till you make it. I'll tell you, still doing that to this day. I walked into the new waste management world and, you know, just, I can do it all and I'll figure it out. And, you know, we landed our first few clients just faking it till we made it, and we figured it out, and it's super successful. So I think there's always a little bit of that at the core. But yeah, how I keep things at bay, just I use it as fuel. And if I need a day, there are days where I'm like, I can't do it. I will allow myself a day to not work, order my favorite food, watch some trash TV, and just relax and be human, and then, you know, get back at it. So I think
that's important.
Keeping it at bay is a good Netflix documentary with a pie pizza, and then I'm like, all right, back to it next day.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. I mean, self-care is obviously very important in that. But I love how you're keeping fear in a box. And you're using it as what you need to make sure that you get past that, right? And then some people let fear run amok, and it's it can be so damaging. But good for you. That's amazing.
I find it funny that all of us humans, in moments like that, we go to, you don't hear anybody saying, "And I watched a masterpiece theater." We all watch trash TV. I don't know what it's, I don't know why that's where we go, but that is where we go. And I'm glad that you're honest about it, Jessica.
It's so good. And at night, when I have to just say, like, there's sometimes when I have late night work, it's on in the background and I'll have the housewives screaming and I'm just typing away, getting emails out. So I think that it's balance, you know, you got a little bit of both.
Yep, for sure.
That's awesome. So nothing is impossible is your personal mantra. So can you share a recent example of a time where that mindset really pushed you through a tough moment? And I'm sure you've had ones since COVID. Because I have had the opportunity to get to know you a little bit, and I can't picture a wall that you couldn't bust through, to be honest.
I mean, climbing a wall, maybe at this age, I'm getting tired, but,
at this age, says the young woman looking at the two middle-aged men.
I know.
Listen, I am 40. Okay, I'm 40 plus. Okay,
well, that makes you way younger than both of us. Yeah, but no, all right.
I'm hurting in places I never thought I'd be hurting. So, thank you for, you know, I look at that as definitely a compliment. My team, I don't know if they love or hate this about me, but when we come up with an opportunity, my mentality is, let's find a solution for it that makes sense. And the biggest example is, right now we're in the sustainability world asking a lot of questions that people don't ask. Like, why is this being done this way? Why can't it be done this way? and just very, you know, things that to me are just, you know, I feel like almost like commonsensical. And some of the easiest solutions are very simple. And I'll give you one example. We're trying to earn business in grocers across the US. And one big thing that grocers have is a lot of food waste. And I learned this through just having a conversation, you know, pitching another line of business that we were doing to reduce their hazardous waste. And they said, hey, you know, our anaerobic digesters upping the price, and we have all these meat scraps and this chicken grease from cooking those rotisserie chickens and these organics. And I sat there and I was thinking, I'm like, why can't we just give them to farmers and all of that? And just thought the idea, you know, right now we have nonprofits go and pick up a lot of items that we're going to trash. Why not have farmers pick up food? These animals eat a lot. I saw on trash TV, you know, all the tiger and monkey shows, Tiger King or whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. So it helped, you see? So I did a little research and figured out that there are a slew of different farmers that need food. And a lot of people on my team are like, it's not going to work. It's not going to make sense. There's not enough farms. There's not enough, you know, to cover nationally. And I'm like, there has to be a way. Even if we don't take, you know, every single store we start it regionally, there has to be a way. Like, why are we taking something and making it into something else and then selling it to farmers? Why not give them the meat? And now we're piloting this program with two major grocers, and it's a direct to farm meat and organics program. And to me, I'm just kind of like, why were they picking it up, driving it somewhere, making something else? And then why not just give the actual food to the animals? And that's just one of the examples of where I'm like, let's figure it out. Let's try a little harder. Let's put some elbow grease in it. Let's call farmers. Let's really figure out if this is possible. And we did. And now it's going.
Let me ask you a question. So I first of all, I think that mantras are important. And I think that having the mindset that nothing is impossible is important. And yet I find myself, as I'm hearing you speak about it, I think the example you cited are examples of where there was, in fact, you know, a path to do something that was worth doing. Sometimes, however, either something, and I don't want to say that something is impossible, because that contradicts your point, and I don't actually think that I want to contradict it, nor do I necessarily agree that there's a contradiction. I do think that sometimes certain things aren't worth doing. So how do you distinguish that fine line between nothing is impossible and some things aren't worth doing?
Money.
Okay.
Easiest way. So one thing that we've encountered in our business is, and why I feel we've become so successful very quickly in the sustainability world, is because I know from my business dealings how hard it is to sell something new and something that either is the same cost or more money. No one wants to change the process. It's a lot. So in order for me to create something or move forward on it, I have to see the money there beforehand. So how we did that with the meat farmers, well, they're paying for transport. They're paying X amount per ton. We had farmers asking to pay us for access to this. So money tells me if it's worth the time or not, and if I'm going to go through with something. So I'll look at a spreadsheet and just put the numbers together really quick in a spreadsheet. And in my mind, I'll know whether I am going to invest in it or not, if it's scalable. And that's the driver, because we don't, you know, have to run a business. So that's really what tells me yes or no.
That's a great answer. You know, it's a great answer. I mean, sometimes the answer is this is worth finding the path. I think that's what you're saying, ultimately, right? There's enough, you know, there's enough there. We're finding out a way to do it is the responsible, savvy thing to do. And I think that's a good standard to have.
I just like the fact you said stabby thing. All right. So let's talk a little bit
about savvy, but if it sounds like savvy, I apologize.
I was like, all right, we're going straight to murder. I guess that goes also with the Netflix.
My nose is a little stuffy today. So okay.
I mean, it's the season. Halloween's around the corner.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry about that. Okay, so with Happen Ventures, which is very, very cool. So I would love for you to give a very quick synopsis of what it is. But you are tackling waste and sustainability. What does beneficial reuse mean to you, and how do you see it impacting communities?
So we don't really know yet what Happen Ventures is, which is the crazy but exciting part of it. We're figuring that out because this is kind of it's a new venture. It's a new idea. We're pushing a lot of boundaries in the waste and sustainability world, but at the core, we're a reuse first company. So the big question that we asked coming into this industry is, why are people going right to recycling or throwing things away and not reusing them? And to me, I walked a waste management show and I saw not one booth focused on reuse. Everything was recycling, composting, all of this. And why take something in its original form and make it into something else? It takes time, energy, and its cost. And so through reuse, we have been able to unlock ways to save companies a significant amount of money because they have to pay to throw things away. We've helped the community because we're diverting things to communities, other businesses, farmers, all these people that can use these items. And we're saving money while doing it, which is, you know, just kind of like this golden trifecta of just value, which has been explosive for us. So at the core, Happen Ventures focuses on how can we reuse items first? How do we stop all the in-betweens, all the brokering, all the moving this in around? And how do we just go direct to the source and get something, somebody's trash, and turn it into a treasure? Just the old thing my dad used to tell me, you know, from trash to treasure. And that's what we've been doing through various programs that we've launched.
Very cool.
So it's definitely cool. And, you know, look, sustainability is kind of a buzzword. People talk about it. But like AI, right? I have a startup in the AI space. People talk about AI and, you know, but they don't really have a plan. They don't really have a strategy. So having a plan, a strategy with most things, particularly starting a business, it helps. However, I kind of dig that you're not pretending to know exactly what you're doing or where you're going. I think that that's endearing at a minimum, but I also think that it's a savvy business strategy, because you're going to be meeting people that have, particularly for something that's new and innovative, that are going to have good ideas. And if they feel that you're open-minded and that you are someone that they believe can get things done, you're going to find that people are going to confide their ideas in you, particularly if they think that you might be able to activate something that they're really passionate about. So there's something really powerful about not spelling out your 10-point plan to do X, Y, or Z, but accepting that I have a vision, it's broad-based, and I'm filling it in. And I'm actually looking for ways to fill it in, and I'm looking for people who might help me fill that in. I think that's a powerful strategy, and I just want to call that out. Let's talk balance for a second, right? So balance is a big theme for you also. And balancing single parenthood, being a high-level executive, I know it's something you're really proud of. How do you manage it? What kind of a legacy do you hope to leave for your kids?
So the honest way of answering that question is, balancing is always happening. It's always continual. So the most important thing I keep in the back of my head is, I have all these balls and there's never going to be this perfect balance, but they're ones that I absolutely can never drop. And those are the core ones for me. And that would be the number one is, you know, my time with my kids. So it's always one thing is less than the other. So I have to be mindful of that and conscious and be able to put things in the place where maybe I'm really burnt out. I need to Netflix and chill one day, or get myself a spa day, or I need to stop working and pay attention to my kids because they need that. Or I need to really stay up late and work on a project. So it is constantly accepting that nothing will be perfect and being okay with that and making sure that the key balls don't drop. And that's how I've been able to really manage things. And the last thing that I've learned in all of my, like, all of my years of entrepreneurship is I love the hustle. Absolutely love it. But to me, success is the most time that I get outside of hustling. And that means that I've made it. So for me to be able to close my laptop, spend time with my kids, that's success. For me to be able to watch Netflix and chill, you know, while answering emails and, you know, whatever, that's success. Like that to me is very important. Not so much everybody's trying to hustle and not have like time to breathe. You burn yourself out. You lose yourself as a person. You lose your relationships. And I think you can maintain that balance if you just remember that there is life outside of there and there's people that depend on you, and just always keep that just be mindful of that. And you can still be a hustler and do all of that and be a great parent, great partner. And last thing, sorry, I have to say, I have a great support system. I have a great co-parent. I have a great partner. All of those things in place allow me to do the things that I need to do in my business. So without them and that support, I wouldn't be as fortunate and feel as lucky as I do now with being able to balance that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Love it. Love it.
We had a very powerful CEO, Shelley Shenbaugh, who was on earlier this season. She's a massive powerhouse. And she had a really interesting observation. She said, you know, work-life balance doesn't mean 50-50. It just means a balance that works for you. And I think it sounds like that's sort of your vision as well. It's about quality, and that makes a lot of sense. And go ahead, PJ. Sorry about that.
That's okay, man. And Jessica, you know, you're very... the word that comes to mind is scrappy, right? You just get in there and you fight, which I love and I admire greatly. What advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs who may not be coming from the silver spoon experience? They might be coming from a tough spot. What would your advice be for them?
Wow. There's so many things, 'cause I learned a lot along the way. I think common sense and scrappiness go a long way than having handouts. I had none. I had no family investments. I had nothing. I just figured it out. So nothing will beat hard work and sticking to it. And also knowing when to walk away. There's another really big lesson that I learned, and that's why I pivot so much, sometimes too much. Is when something doesn't work and you have this grandiose idea that you want to make happen and it just doesn't, you tried so hard, doesn't mean you have to stop, just pivot. It's okay to just be like, you know, leave that dream here and move here. And follow where the clients are going, you know, and that's probably my best advice. Be nimble, be flexible. You don't need a whole big expensive team to do what you need to do. And if you're just starting up, learn a little bit of everything, because it will be super valuable when you start hiring people and you know that they're actually doing the job, because you could direct them because you know how to do it yourself. So just start, just do it. Just don't wait for it to be perfect. Just get started. Just start calling, start researching, start emailing, start moving. Just don't wait for the perfect time. There's no perfect time. Just keep going and you'll get a lot farther than people who are waiting for the perfect conditions and everything to be done before launching. You don't need anything other than a phone and your laptop to start a business.
Love it. So our guest today, Jessica Gonzalez, has done some really cool things. We didn't even get to many of them. I wanted to talk to you about how you ended up with, you know, having the opportunity to work with brands like Google and Coca-Cola and Coachella, having not started with, you know, a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of connections. I think we'd need to have you back to dig into that. But I think we've learned a lot. And I think that there are lessons in today's episode for not just scrappy entrepreneurs, for any entrepreneurs. You know, I think Jessica's mindset, especially that last point, I would urge people to rewind and listen to what Jessica said, because it might seem like it is somehow in tension with nothing is impossible, but actually it's not. It's in perfect harmony with nothing is impossible. Being able to recognize the right time in business to pivot is not an indication that something is impossible. It's an indication of recognizing what is possible. And that's an incredible strength. And that's what allowed Jessica to build a business that did more than $25 million in revenue and sell another business. And if you guys don't know, the odds of starting a business and taking it to $1 million, I think are extremely long. I think less than 5% of businesses get to $1 million. Less than 5% of those businesses get to $10 million. Less than 1% of those get to $20 million. But what Jessica did was incredible. And I think you heard a lot of reasons why in this episode. Jessica, thank you so much for being our guest. Continued success to you. And we'd love to have you back and dig into some of the other things we didn't get to talk about today.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, Jessica.
It's great.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube. And please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.